You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Good evening, everybody. You know, I was thinking to myself today, as we listen to Patty Andrews over here, and I put this song on for a reason. I Can Dream, Can I? Because if you listen to the lyrics, it's about somebody dreaming about being with someone that they know will always just be out of reach, whether it be that they're separated by miles, by continents, by oceans, or just you know it as well as anybody. If you're a human, and if you spent any considerable amount of time on this earth, you know that sometimes you can have a universe worth of space in between you and somebody else that you might be sharing the same room with. And I've always been conscious of this. I've always been very, very aware of this feeling, and I've always been very, very aware at a very young age of aging and death and passing on. And it's something that's always kept me in check, but it's always been something that I battle with as well, because especially now that I'm getting older and the people I share my time with, I feel like I miss them, even though they're not gone yet. You know, I look at my parents, I look at just anybody, everybody. I soak every moment I have up with Lauren, at least I try to, and I tell you, she, this song, I remember this song actually kicked me into gear of making things official with Lauren again. Because when we first started talking again, that was after 3 years of being broken up. Now, Lauren and I, we met in 2005 at Line Park Pharmacy when it was still around. Her mother had come by the pharmacy, and she had always come in and out of the pharmacy every couple of months, and I always had a crush on her. She was the girl with just big mountains of curly brown hair and pajama pants. And I always said, I loved when Lauren came in, because it's just, she always looked so comfortable. And I never knew how to make any conversation with her. And when I finally had the chance to talk to her, it was like September 27th of 2005, around then. And her mother was coming in because she was about to go to South Africa for a trip, I believe with her church, and she was coming in for all like the malaria vaccines and all the stuff that you have to take before you go off overseas like that. And finally, and that's when Facebook would just got launched. My college and Lauren's college, Sacred Heart, were both on Facebook, because at that time it was a big deal if your school got added to Facebook. Not all schools were added, and you needed a college email to join it. Not before it became a equal opportunity nut job fest. And when all our grandparents started getting on it. And, yeah, well, in either case. With that being said, she was always the one. I always gave her a hard time. Very standoffish. The second time we got back together. Of course, we had broken up the first time. She had broken up with me. And then we spent three, it was after a year together, and we were still in college, and we just finished college apart. And then in 2009, we started seeing each other again, started hanging out. I wanted to see what she was up to. Of course, everything was very underhanded, and, you know, everything was secret, hush, hush. And we got back together, but it wasn't official for a couple of years until maybe about 2012 or so. And it was that song right there, that really, really put it together for me, because I didn't want her to feel, and it started stretching out beyond her now, I didn't want her to feel like she was going to be the one, you know, left out and always on the outside looking in. Somebody separated by a universe with somebody that was always in the same room as her. And it really started making me think about a lot of different things. The people that we talk, the people that we act this way with, the walls that we build with the people around us all the time. And I can't, it really is the saddest thing in the world to me. But it's the most human thing in the world for some reason. And I try to take snapshots of things that are happening right now in life with parents and with friends. And, you know, you start seeing people getting ailments and health problems, and you start clutching to things. You start getting a little bit more of a hypochondriac about things. As much as you try to chill and really soak it in, you also, that's the struggle I go through. Letting go and just letting things happen and not sacrificing the moment for some kind of anxiety that of a loss that you haven't even experienced yet. It's like, why fast forward to the loss? But there's other things there that get me. And I remember, and I always relate things to movies. And I brought up this one part. I brought up a clip of this one part of Saving Private Ryan. It's about 2 minutes long. It's the night before the character Wade dies. Who's it played by? Shit. It's got an Italian name. Starts with a G. I don't know. In either case, listen to this. Watch this clip right here. It's 2 minutes long. I want you guys to really take this into account and listen to it if you're at home listening.
Look, we're gonna move out in 2 hours. Why don't you get some sleep?
Oh, no, he doesn't.
What's that?
Falls asleep like that. I mean, look at him. The guy's lights out. The minute his head hits the back.
A clear conscience.
Yeah, what's it saying? God's on our side, who the hell could be on this?
Huh. Giovanni Ribisi.
If God be for us, who could be against us?
Yeah, what I say?
Well, actually, the trick to falling asleep is trying to stay awake.
How is that way?
Well, when my mother was an intern, she used to work late through the night, sleep through the day. So the only time that we ever got to talk about anything was when she'd get home. So what I used to lie in my bed and try to stay awake as long as I could, but it never worked because... because the harder I tried, the faster I'd fall asleep.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have mattered none in my house. My ma, she would have come home, shook me awake, chatted me up till dawn. I swear that woman was never too tired to talk.
That's probably the only time she could get a word in.
Funny thing is, sometimes she'd come home early, and I'd pretend to be asleep.
Who, your mom?
Yeah. Stand in the doorway looking at me. And I just keep my eyes shut. And I knew she just wanted to find out about my day. That she came home early. Just to talk to me. And I still wouldn't move. I'd still pretend to just be asleep. I don't know why I did that.
And earlier on today, that came. It's the first thing that popped to my mind because earlier on today, you know, I handle a lot of business with a lot of different with all of our projects here, And earlier on today, when I was gathering news for tonight, reading, doing all my usual routines, I'm going through headlines and I'm following through the links and cited sources, and I'm just reading through terrible shit to try to put things together for a conversation, to try to make things a little bit easier for people to understand, and or maybe just find a starting place, because that's the other thing. I don't have any illusions about what this show is capable of as far as influencing anything. I think that we have a really nice growing community of people that are hanging out, and that's really all it is. It's just conversation. If you see on the Patreon I created, it just says, quite frankly, is creating conversation. You know, I don't ever think, especially not anytime soon, that we're ever going to be a major influence on any kind of polls or anything like that. It's not about that. But what it is about for me is being able to resist. Being able to resist the influence, the terrible influence of those who hold the strings in this world. Right from the top down. Everything that gets dribbled out through media, that comes from all everybody else that gives them their marching orders. The special interest groups, the world bankers, the I don't know, the George Soros types, the real King Spider types. Because I'm thinking to myself as I was trying to put my mind around a few things, and then I just looked at my own life, because you think about all the way it really trickles down to affect you. If it trickles down to affect the way that you can possibly start a business, run a business one day, the way you can spend your own money, the places you can go, the conversations you can talk, you can have with people, the conversations that are acceptable these days, the thoughts, the line of thinking that are acceptable these days, the illusion of having a country, the illusion of history is, I mean, you grow up knowing one thing and affirming one thing, and now you have to bend for something else. And I'm not somebody who opposes change. In fact, I've embraced it a lot these days. But not the type of change that people are trying to sell these days. And when you spend even a small amount of time reading the news poorly, even skipping every other word, just trying to get a gist of what's going on, it's really easy to see and to blank out and to just become completely turned in on yourself, imploding. And then you look at your own personal financial situations and all the responsibilities you have, and it really mounts up. There's external pressures, there's internal pressures, and all of this was happening at a time where Lauren was about to leave to go for a walk with her sister somewhere. And she said goodbye to me, and I said goodbye to her, and, you know, I just read in her body language, she probably wanted to say more, because she probably can see what types of things I was thinking, where my mind was, because my body language, she knows me better than anybody else at this point, probably just as good as most people. I would say Anthony has a pretty good read on me. But, you know, Lauren is, we spend a lot of time together. Anybody in your life that you spend a lot of time with, you just know what's going on. And like Giovanni Ribisi, like Wade in Saving Private Ryan, I kept my eyes glued to the screen, knowing that maybe just a lock of the eyes would have given her the confidence to ask if everything was all right and not want to intrude on whatever kind of, you know, situation I was in at the time. Because she's never afraid to bring anything up. But at the same time, we both know each other enough. And everybody also, if you guys have relationships like this, you also know that it's sometimes good not to try to fix everybody's problems, especially the ones that are closest to you. Trying to fix somebody's problem for them is usually not the best thing. Trying to hang over somebody's shoulder the whole time and trying to give them the step-by-step guide to getting out of the problem is usually not the best thing. Being there for people, being available when they're ready to come out of their shell is the best thing. But at the same time, I want to know why we put ourselves inside of our shells sometimes. Why we pretend to be asleep sometimes. Because all we all do it. We all do it. And if you pay attention to it, you're sometimes able to do it less and less. But I wonder what the hell it is. I wonder what it is. Because that part, that one part, that monologue in Saving Private Ryan has always hit me hard. From the time I first watched the movie. Always hit me hard. Because I have memories of doing stuff like that. And it kills me. It killed me. It always killed me watching that because, of course, you're looking at this from a standpoint of a soldier in France fighting his way across Europe on what seems to be a suicide mission for, you know, one of five brothers that was almost certainly could be counted as dead. And here's this reminiscing the night before he actually dies in battle and never gets to see his mother again. And subsequently cries for her as he is dying. It is one of the most heart-wrenching things to watch. But at the same time, you think about that, it's harrowing from the standpoint of somebody who's in a position where they can lose their life and they can lose a chance to go back and make anything, you know, rectify the situation at all, at any moment, because of the precarious situation they're in, fighting a war. But then what excuse does that give us, the people who are home, the people who don't have mortars and grenades exploding over our heads, who don't have to leap from airplanes into enemy-occupied territory? What excuse does it give us to put people who we know genuinely care in a back seat? And why do we get frustrated with the people that want to help us the most? Why is it? And why do we give second chances? And why do we want the approval of the people who we know are bad or bad for us? We always do it. I mean, it's a driving force for a lot of things that are going on in the streets right now. But then you look at things that are going on this week, leaks this week. When I look at these George Soros leaks, and you are actually able to color in with a just brilliant color, really pencil in and fill up all of the ugly details about this man and what his organizations do, all of their affiliates, what they do, what they're doing to the world, how they manipulate the stability of nations to bet against the nation and make billions of dollars on their currency rising and falling, what they're doing with the migrant crisis, what they do with natural resources. You know, and you think about the people who are affected by this. You think about progressivism and this worldwide ideology, this cancer, and Soros is at the center of it. At the center of it, and all these other Alinskyites that are running around in the streets in the United States and occupying the halls of Congress, and what they're doing and what their programs have created, the instability they've created in this country, the families they've ruined, they continue to ruin, the minds that they've poisoned. They've taken away all of the opportunities for growth for some people. If you really look at how deep the damage is that these cretins are laying down before us, if you really look how deep the damage is, that's something that a job won't fix. We know that work ethic is done. We know that entitlement and victimhood comes first. But that's something that even if you were to say, listen, all right, we've created jobs and there are real jobs for everybody, that doesn't fix the fact that people they don't have family ties. Family ties are gone. There's no good relationships. Look at how people are making friends these days. You think those are, we brought this up a couple of times in the last couple of months. You think those are solid relationships that people, social justice activists and fanatics on the streets and on the internet are forming? You think those are solid relationships? No, man. No, those are addicts. Addicts seeking other addicts. And then something else happened to me. So you look at that. You look at that. And of course, I said the manipulation of currency and people and the dissolving of national borders and sovereignty and identity and culture and really destroying humanity at its root. And what really is it? I'm sorry, but at the crux of it all, at the crux of it all is the delivering of guilt to mostly people who identify as white, or especially white Christians. And here I come from a stance that I don't identify with a religion. I was raised Roman Catholic. I tell you all about the cozy times I have with those customs and the people and being in Catholic school from kindergarten to actually from pre-K to 12. But I don't consider myself a practicing Catholic. All I do is observe. And maybe you have a different observation here. I see people of all walks of life coming under fire and feeling the heat and feeling the pressure and the scorn and the weight of this unbearable invasion. I see people of all races, creeds, colors feeling the weight of what is going on a worldwide scale. And I hate to paint things so dimly and so bleakly. But whereas people suffer, there is a movement to exacerbate that suffering, to instill, to put on a different set of lenses for everybody to see the world through. And just like in other phases of human history, where a scapegoat must be provided to a very hungry, ravenous, downtrodden few to gain power, it's being done again. In my estimations, from reading through World War, the history of the world wars and the plight of the Jews, I see it just coming down on white Christians now and Western culture as a whole. And that is not to say that people of color, of all religion, are not a part of Western civilization, because they are vital parts. Anybody who comes and migrates to the United States, Canada, Western Europe, even as far as even Eastern Europe, is progressive considering when compared to Africa and the Middle East and the rest of Asia. So that's the other thing that's there. But that is just the people you're dealing with. Those are the eggs that people like George Soros and open society demons are willing to crack to create this really, really gross omelet. A really gross omelet. You're talking about people of all faiths and colors living peacefully in Western culture. Western culture, who are then forced to take on the weight of what is not even being done, perpetrated in their names. For example, and this all ties in, for example, and please call in whenever you'd like. The thing that really gets me is this. When you look at what's going on right now in the Muslim world, okay? If you really look at what's going on in the Muslim world right now, I wish there was a way to get Western Muslims screaming at the top of their lungs, especially the ones who escape the hellholes. That is the rest of the world, outside of the Western world, okay? Places that we would not like to live. If you're a woman, if you're gay, if you are a progressive Muslim, if you are a... things. This is what I'm talking about. These are places that nobody, the culture that is being imported into the Western world, that is clashing with everything else, comes down on everybody. Everybody. But people are being forced into silencing themselves, or to following along with an ideology that actually puts them in danger, because they don't want to be on the wrong side of history. But they are on the wrong side of history. And it's going to come down hard. It really is. It has nothing to do. It never had anything to do with peaceful elements of a religion over here or peaceful elements of a religion over there. It has everything to do with the culture and the way of life of the parts of the world from which millions of people are being exported to fulfill nefarious political purposes, crony capitalist purposes. This is an ideological war, okay? People at the top who have an ideology of no borders, no countries, one world government, one world currency, and we've got all the stake, we own all the shares. That is an ideology that is using other backwards ideologies around the world as a vehicle for attaining their ultimate goal. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're having all the wrong arguments. And it's this thinking that when you start putting those dots together, you have you go back and forth. It's this type of thinking that definitely gets me to sit back, slink back in my chair, and go, okay, I need to take a break. And then you start thinking, is there really a way to reverse this? Because, once again, this audience isn't going to do anything as this audience. We're a smaller piece of a much larger whole. But we just got to come out here and vent every night. That's what we need to be able to do. Got to just find people that share in the misery and know where we're all coming from. That's all I need to do here. I have no illusions over what we're capable of, because what we are up against is gigantic. And the average person who's sitting around licking their ice cream cones, just an innocent bystander who only understands two things, Hillary good and Trump is bad. Those people that only understand two things, you'd never be able. That's the other thing that frustrates me. And I know it frustrates you too. You would never be able to have a conversation outside of Hillary good, Trump bad, to anybody. It always comes down to you can't try to tell them about the leaks, why this matters. Why this matters. That's why if there was any way to get across to anybody out there on WikiLeaks, if they have anything else on Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, they have anything else on the Democratic Party, because forget about the Republican Party is gone. Remember, the Republican Party is gone. That has already been destroyed. It's Donald Trump. Okay? There are going to be the people who are endorsing him are the people who don't want to become irrelevant. That is all. The Republican Party, as you know it, is gone. At least for right now. And in either case, it is a subsidiary of the Democrat Party. Those are the people who set the narratives. They set the tone for every conversation we have as a nation, for every debate we have on policy. They're the ones who claim squatting rights over certain demographics and just allow Republicans to try to pick up the crumbs and hobble along, go along to get along. That's it. So don't play that game. I don't want to talk about that game at all. Republican Party's gone. It comes down to this. If Julian Assange and the team over there at WikiLeaks have any type of insight of what's going on with this world right now, maybe throw a little bit of breadcrumbs out there to try to keep the polls in check. Because we're being lied to about the polls. 100%, they're not true. I don't believe them. I don't know how anybody could. Okay, I understand things swing from week to week, but they swing 17 to 20 points because of the Khan family? Are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? So don't believe the polls. If Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have any kind of idea of what's going on here and how little anybody cares, then they've got to wait. They've got to wait it out. They've got to drop an atomic bomb worth of stuff on November 1st. They have got to poison the week leading up to the election. They just have to. Do not waste anything on this public right now. Okay, the critical mass of people, if there's any chance to sway any undecideds in that 11th hour, any chance of swaying any kind of really, truly independent people who are trying to get a hold of any of those old Reagan Democrats, if they still exist, anybody, if you have any chance, then you have got to wait. You've got to hold all your cards for that last week. You have to. And just try to change the momentum, the feeling, because that's all it's going to take. This election is going to be decided on what happens the days leading up to the election. Because there's already been a couple of points in this election season so far, which goes on way too long. If there's anything, I would love to outlaw campaign practices of any kind up until 6 months before. Okay, fine. January 1st. You want to do that? January 1st. Or how about the day after tax day in April? That's when you can start putting your hat into the mix. You have a month of debates. You pick your nominees. Stop these primaries and caucuses all throughout the spring months. It should all be done on one fucking day. Get it over with. It is criminal how long these elections go on for. Absolutely criminal. Not only is it boring, but it is criminal. It's a distraction. Complete distraction. As soon as somebody gets elected, they start thinking about re-election. And then you see their true colors in their lame duck term. When they know that they have nothing else to go for, they're in their second term, they're just going to be dropping whatever the hell they can. So there's a few things that are really killing me here. But how's it affecting your personal relationships? The people who listen to this show, I trust, are a lot more in tune with what's going on. How is it affecting your personal relationships, though? I'll tell you, there's something else going on in my life right now that I wish I could talk about. And maybe I can bring up in some sort of way. I'm going to think about it. Because I'll tell you, I love sharing myself. I love sharing the thing that's going on, because I get a lot of insight from you guys when you then reciprocate and share yourselves a little bit. But some things you can't put out there right away. And this is pretty serious. But we'll get around to that. Let's go on a really quick break. Come back, and we're just going to see some headlines and move through a little bit as we can. See what's going on in the chat room. The Skype is on. See you guys in a little bit.
Out of all the personalities, aspiring musicians, writers, poets, and internet sensations here in the 21st century, there is indeed one group that loves smoking a hookah better than everybody else. That's right, the Zidalza Entertainment Network, a broadcast network hailing from New York, comprised of all original programming and personalities. And they smoke the hookah like it's nobody's business. They pack a hookah for their network meetings, live broadcasts. They've even come up with their own signature tricks, such as the L-shaped exhale and the smokestack. Ah, yes. No one enjoys a hookah better than the boys over at www.zenlive.tv.
You're watching the Zidalza Entertainment Network on ZenLive.tv.
Oh, right. What's going on? Why is this muted? This should not be muted. All right, so Gadget Doc in the chat room says, gotta start somewhere, Frank. I understand that. I understand that. And you know, you gotta take those good with the bad. You gotta take those negatives with positives. This has been a little bit of a down show, down tempo. It doesn't have to be depressing. That whole scene with Saving Private Ryan, the Giovanni Ribisi part, I want to hear what you guys think about that. Seriously, I really want to get a couple, especially any of our members of the audience that spend any time in military combat, the things that you think about the night before you go off on a patrol or anything else, the things that you do before you go off on a mission, anything, I would love to get that insight. That's something that's very, very useful to me. Because, of course, we, like we usually say on this show, too, everybody's burdens usually feel like they weigh the same, even though they look different. Whether you're in a combat situation, whether you've got a disease, or you're fighting, you're with somebody that is not in good health, you have a lot of pressure on yourself to support a family. There's financial pressures. There's social pressures. There's a lot of things that make you feel like you're in a war zone. There's a lot of different things that can make you feel that way. The biochemical response is the same. The fear is the same. The emotions are the same. But of course, some of us have seen things that are a little bit more extreme than others. I would love to hear about those. I'd love to hear about the times that you have those looking back, wishing that you hadn't blocked somebody out. You know, I tell people I love them just because it's been a couple of hours since the last time I did now. You know? Doesn't take away from it. It's a little bit neurotic sometimes. I sometimes drag my hand along walls as I leave the house, just to soak up the last time I'm in my hallway before I leave to go do whatever I have to do. So you don't know what the hell is going to happen. And I think knowing that, keeping a really good handle on your own mortality is very, very useful in going forward and in keeping things healthy with people. Because if you get caught up in what is being shoved down our throats, if you really get caught up in it on a daily basis and you get lost in that whirlpool, you get sucked down by the riptide and that undertow, oh my God. You become the people who are burning down their neighborhoods in Milwaukee and Baltimore and Ferguson, that are killing themselves in Chicago. You think though any of those people have really strong ties to anything? No. Maybe the ones who are out there trying to peacefully get a message across and are genuinely scared, perhaps. But anybody who is really looking for peace is not out there putting their family's lives on the line, and putting their family in a position where they might have to grieve your loss. Especially when you're fighting something that is so shallow. And you get lost in that? That's like drowning in the shallow end of the pool. You know? It's like drowning in a jacuzzi. You just boil in this shit until you fall asleep and slide in. And then that's it. That's it. So I want to know what you guys use to bring yourself back to reality. That's what I like to know. Let me go back to the chat room since that's where most of the conversation is going on. Frankie Castle says, "I wish I had a personal relationship." Rumble and Roar kind of says mimics the same thing. You guys have, you guys know what I mean. Come on, You guys have personal relationships. You have family you care about. People. It doesn't have to be even people you know. You know what I really care about? There's this one guy. Here's an example. When I worked at that same pharmacy, now I always talk about the anthology of short stories I want to write about this and that. Well, I can write an anthology about the days in the backyard with the kids from my neighborhood in our army throughout the summers in the 90s. I can also write about all the years I spent at that pharmacy that I just told you about. The pharmacy where I really grew up in. I worked all throughout high school and college there. I met Lauren there. But just, you meet people. I learned how to deal with people every day. I hate retail, but I really like talking to people. And there was this one guy, Derek. He was a, I don't know, I think he was autistic. I don't know what exact, wait a second. No, he had a stroke. He had a stroke. He was once, you know, normally functioning. And for a couple of years, the first couple of years I knew him, I thought that he was just very highly functioning but autistic or mentally handicapped in some way. And he would come in and he would run errands for his mother. He was in his 30s. And he was a Minnesota Vikings fan. And we would go back and forth. And I would talk to him about football. And I'd help him shop around the pharmacy. This is a very small pharmacy, mom and pop store. And I really, really enjoyed Derek coming through. And he remembered me even the years after the pharmacy closed in 2006. That was ultimately when I left the pharmacy, when it closed, when Medicare Part D passed. And it really put a knife in the side of mom and pop pharmacies and all that. And Walgreens came in and bought up all of our accounts and bought up all the stock. And I remember that day that we were packing it all up. I went through all of the sign sheets, the HIPAA sign sheets, when people came in to sign for their prescriptions. And, you know, this was illegal, but I went through, at that time it was 2006, I went about a year and a half back through all those signatures to find Lauren's signature the day that we finally spoke for the first time. And I ripped that sheet out and I mailed it to her in a letter. We were already broken up by that time, and she later told me she threw it out. I would have thrown it out too. We were already broken up. It was over. But you see, sentimental like that, you know, you see things changing. I don't like when things change, but at least give it a proper send off. I like that. It gives a little bit more layers to the onion of life that when you look at it, if you look at a movie reference, The Prestige, when Hugh Jackman is talking about the reason why they did it, the reason why they were involved in magic and being magicians was to take away from the cold, solid, through and through, miserable world that was really out there. What was that old anecdote about Einstein? This one I learned from my physics teacher in high school, but I actually just heard it referenced on radio again today. I was like, oh, that was fantastic. There was this old anecdote about Einstein, and he was talking to somebody about relativity, and somebody was talking about relativity and reality and how it really brings into question what reality is and what reality isn't. And there is no is there reality, questioning everything and all that shit. And Einstein gets up and slaps the guy across the face and says, was that real? And that is just, I don't know, that's just it. So as much as we have these existential crises, the pharmacy, that was big. A big growing up and a big saying goodbye. And looking back for things that I can say, this affected me, this was a big part of my life, and it made life worth living. If it does come to the place where I do close my eyes for the last time, whenever that day may be, and the lights go out, everything goes dark, and that's the end of everything, then that is what I'm cool with. I'm cool with having collected all of those memories. And Derek was one of those people in the pharmacy. He would come in. He didn't have a lot of control over the volume of his voice, and he always spoke very fast and slurred a little bit. But I loved seeing him because he was always ready to laugh, and he always sought me out because I was one of the only people that spoke to him. You know, a lot of people they get uncomfortable when they're around people with disabilities. They don't know how to act. It's not necessarily that they don't like them. It's just it's awkward for some people. And it was never like that with me and this guy Derek. I used to love seeing him. And after the pharmacy closed in 2006, I would still see him across. He would scream to me from across the street whenever he would see me in town, and I would go run over to say hello to him, and we'd talk a little bit about his favorite football teams and all that. And one day he tipped me, and he was very, very, very insistent on tipping me for I don't know what, but I guess just for everything. And he gave me a $1 bill, and I tried to refuse him with everything I could. I said, Derek, really, I really appreciate this, but you don't have to. And he actually started getting a little upset. So I said, okay. And I still have that dollar. I altered it a little bit because when I do some visualization, I like to see what my goals are. And I altered that dollar a little bit, and I put 6 extra zeros at the end of it. And I see that every time I go to sleep. And that's what I do. And those are the real things there. Those are relationships that I'm talking about. How does it affect you? Are those the people that you normally pass on the street and don't look up and meet eye to eye because you're so consumed by something else that's going on? If you are, then you're missing out. And I hate talking about the confines of things that that really shackle you, like money worries, professional worries, political worries, social worries, all those things that people, other people, have stake in, the community organizers that make money off of organizing the community while everybody else is just living in poverty, living in, you know, inescapable notions of victimhood and entitlement. All the people that they gave something to be upset about, they remain impoverished. The organizers get rich. So everybody else is walking around wringing their hands, thinking about how they're going to buy the next loaf of bread. And you can say, and some people say it's capitalism. No. People acting freely. People creating services and products that other people can either buy or don't buy. Creating businesses, giving people opportunities to further themselves, be a part of something new. Free association with people. Completely detached from government involvement. That has nothing to do with cap. Don't bring that in. Okay? You're talking about outside actors, influencers of the highest order that are making sure that people are detached from what's real in life. And the relationships, those are number one. Real, high quality, interpersonal human relationships, that's number one first and foremost. And once that's taken away and people are just turned into nincompoops, zombie nincompoops, there's nothing else, there's nowhere else to go. I saw Johnny Kimball was calling in, but I just wanted to get all that the last of the story about Derek out there. Johnny, what's going on, man? What's the first thing on your mind?
You were talking about send-offs and things of the like.
Yeah.
And giving a proper send-off. My last job, it was a laundromat. Well, my last, like, paycheck job. Laundromat and a car wash. Meet all sorts of different people at a laundromat. This guy works at UMass Boston in the department. They do like war research and whatnot. Anyways, he's like 75, commutes from here to there every day because he likes his little beach house, wicked small cottage. And this guy grew up Irish Catholic, like in Boston. His parents, his aunt lived above him. And their family and his grandparents lived below them, kind of style, like full on the whole thing. And he was telling me how when his parents left Ireland, because he's like they left Ireland and came here. And when they left, they actually gave them a wake because their family they were leaving there knew that they were never, ever going to see them again. Mm. And it was just, when he told me that, I'm like, a wake? And he's like, yeah, you have two wakes in this time period. Like, you had two wakes when you got buried and when you left Ireland.
That's really, really interesting. And you know, what is the real point of a wake? You know, you think about what the point of the wake is, and you think about the commemorating of somebody's life. But to be able to be there for your own wake, you know, that's actually a coming of age ritual in a couple of different indigenous South American cultures. I have to go looking up for that. But there are, and I think that people can go and seek out these types of almost like gurus and shamans to actually have these experiences where some cultures actually bury themselves alive. You get buried alive for a certain to actually lay in your grave for a night. And there's a certain type of meditative state that you put yourself into. There's things that you're reflecting on, all that stuff. And then to emerge from your grave the next day, supposedly one of the most freeing experiences of your life. I don't know how I would ever be able to do it. But maybe that's another show that we should really focus in on. Burial practices around the world. I thought the burial, one of the most interesting burial practices that I ever learned about was sky burial. And that was when, the deceased are actually set atop a hilltop and they're actually placed in almost like a Indian style type of pose. And as time goes, they're pretty much left there for the vultures. And they're picked dry and allowed to just fly up in the bellies of all of the winged creatures of the area. And I think that there's something really there for us to talk about. I'd love to jump into that one night.
Interesting. To wrap up that thought, this man, Michael, I consider him a friend. I have his phone number. We'll text sometime.
There you go.
He's a guy you'd want to sit down. I mean, this guy, he knows Russian and all this, and like, he can recite to you probably the first five pages of Whose Wake, the epic book that's like this long, and you have to read it if you're a literature person.
War and Peace?
No, Finnegan's Wake.
Okay. Oh, Wake.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
No, that's fine. That was me. Him and his brothers grew up. His brother is a judge, and he was a teacher and an editor for a newspaper, and now he works at this college for the last 20 or so years. They said to his parents, him and his brother and all, they said, you know, do you want to go back? I mean, we're successful because you provided us this life. Do you want to go back and see your family? And they said no. They're done with it. Like they just, it was so completely behind them that even with the opportunity and in a positive light, even because like it, you know, it's not like going to visit your grandmother's house because you know your aunt died or something, like,
right.
You know, it would be a vacation style thing.
Yeah.
It's totally different style of thinking. I think than.
No, it is, man. And thank you for bringing that up. I did not know about the two wakes. That's very, very interesting. It really is. And thanks for calling in. You got to call back in tomorrow night with some more stories, my friend.
Yeah. I wish I could get that guy in the air.
What did you think?
He'll sit there and talk, and it's like, wow, does he know a lot of things? Does he see a lot of things?
I would love to. I want to talk to people like that. What did you think about the first 50 minutes of the show? Anything that sticks out?
Very cerebral. I don't know. They say that about football players. You know, he's a cerebral player.
Yeah. Mike Messina.
No, I thought it was good. A different wavelength tonight.
Yeah, I was getting real, you know, deep at home when I started going through all those clips too. I had to get through it all, and bring it up. But dude, thank you for the call, man. Gonna wrap it up in about 3 minutes here.
Gadgetdog's thinking it might have something to do with a lunar eclipse. I'm not sure.
It could be. It could be. I'm probably susceptible to all that stuff. I don't know. Hey, Gadget Doc, what does that have to do with Aries? I know you're a big You got to do my tarot cards on the air again soon. Maybe we'll do on Friday night.
Is she oh God. What's her name there?
Who?
The lovely woman who does the show after your dad.
Angela?
Yes.
Yeah, Angela had to take a little bit of a break again. She's actually going to be coming back when she comes back.
She went to out west, right?
Yeah, she's going to be coming back, and she'll be occupying the 10 p.m. slot. So coming up next is Scotty Milan and Being Human, and then you have AMP show at 9.
Which is a friggin' hoot just to leave on and just hang out to.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you. And then again, you have the 9 o'clock. I can't believe it. The 9 o'clock show, the AMP show, my father's show. They found a way back in the 9 o'clock slot. They were in the 9 o'clock Wednesday night slot for years, and then they left for like maybe 18 months or something like that. And I said, well, you can come back, but you're going to have to do 10. They're like, all right, no problem. And boom, 3 weeks later, they're back at 9 because Angela had to go away for a little bit. But in either case, thanks for the call again, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, everybody else, I hope it was a good experience for you. Tomorrow night, we're going to do a little bit more headlines and all that, but I couldn't talk nuts and bolts tonight. I was too emotional. And also, I want to thank Jimmy. I want to thank Moonlit Altar. I want to thank Christian from the Amatory Murder. I got to thank everybody that has been contributing to the Patreon. I would love to hear from you guys because we have about 2 minutes left of this show. If you can just get in touch with me, let me know what you think would be great for a $1 and a $5 Patreon. What kind of perks? You know, a shout out at the end, something that I can give you without having to give you something physical. You know, is it a certain type of vlog that you want to see me start up? Is it a certain type of, I mean, what is it? What can I do for you guys? Because I'm really, really inspired by the people who are contributing to the Patreon. Right now it's up to like $80 a month pledged from you guys, and it's fantastic because I want to do this five nights a week, and I want to put everything I have into it, and I want to keep growing it. So thank you guys so much for the support. I'm going to add some more stuff to that patreon.com/quitefrankly, and also please tell a friend, tell a foe about the show. When we come back, we're going to actually have some really cool guests coming up soon, too. Two guests I've been looking to book, so watch out for that. And I'll see you guys tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Coming up next, Being Human, Scotty Milan, and also at 9 p.m., the AMP show. So there's that. Nikki says, nope, Frank will not strip for us, so don't even ask. Listen, if we had 100 people... Okay, listen. If we get to 100 contributors, if there's 100 patrons at just like 100, at $1 a piece a month, $1 pledged a month, if we just get to 100 patrons, I swear to you, the first thing that will happen is I'll do a show in a guinea tee. We get to 150 patrons, then I'll do a show topless. Okay? There you go. There you go. Fine. And then you can just pretend I don't have pants on because you don't see me from the waist down anyway. All right, guys. So that's it for tonight. I hope you all have a great evening and enjoy what's coming up next on ZenLive.tv. It is always a good time. Don't go anywhere. Be well.